We're going to look at that tonight. We're going to look at how Joseph is a good example. And there's a lot of passages we could go to. I picked, hard to pick, just a couple. But it's in Genesis chapter 39 and verses 1 and 2. Genesis 39, 1 and 2. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. At least I picked those verses in particular. Of course, they tell the whole story of how he got there, who he was with, why he was there. But the first part of verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. You could say all through the account of Joseph that certainly the Lord was with Joseph. Joseph's over there in Hebrews chapter 11, what a lot of times we refer to as the Hall of Fame of Old Testament worthies. And yet Joseph sometimes kind of gets overlooked, but there's a lot in the latter part of Genesis that deals, you know, just with Joseph. Joseph, of course, being one of the sons of Jacob. There was a tribe of Joseph. If you don't believe me, you go to the book of Revelation, you'll find out. But in the dividing up of things and of the land, a lot of times we say there are 12 tribes, which there were, because there were 12 sons. But then there was Joseph's tribe was divided up between his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. That makes 13. And yet the land was divided up among 12. Well, that's because Levi was the tribe that concerned the priesthood. They didn't have land given to them. They lived in all the other portions of the land. So it's kind of interesting following all that, really. A lot of times they'll say the half-tribe of Ephraim or the half-tribe of Manasseh, referring to the fact that they were from the tribe of Joseph. So Joseph kind of gets overlooked since there isn't a tribe named after him, you know, throughout the Old Testament, things like that. And then I think to myself, and then think about the events in Joseph's life. Now, there were a lot of big things there. There's no question about it. But I don't recall Joseph battling a giant and defeating him, or being swallowed by a great fish. I don't recall perhaps him being like someone in the New Testament, like Peter, you know, for a while, walked on the water. We could think about a number of other things. You know, Joseph with, you know, standout events like this? No, not really. But there was a steadiness to Joseph all the way through. We're talking this morning about how often, I was talking to someone this morning about how often we let our problems run our lives. That's what happens, isn't it? And it's real easy to get into that kind of thing. I dare say Joseph had a great many problems to deal with. Sure did. Treachery, just disappointment, a lack of recognition, so many things. And the interesting thing about it is there's this steadiness of Joseph. Now, whereas the world would say, understandably, well, right here is where Joseph should have just quit the Lord. But he never did he? No matter what happened to him, no matter how unfair, as my children always used to remind me of things. That was their favorite word for a lot. That's just unfair. Everything was unfair. Everything. They got over it. They grew up is what they did. But so many things unfair. and where justice, it just didn't seem like was ever served, as the world would count justice. And they say, oh, well, that just, it'd be a good time to quit the Lord, not think anything about it. But he never did. There's that steadiness with Joseph. And also, what you can find with some of the Old Testament characters, that there was occasions where they had feet of clay. Abraham lied. David, with Bathsheba, you know. And you could go down through there, and there isn't anything like that with Joseph. The only thing that someone could say, and it won't hold water, is that he married an Egyptian woman. That would just be about it if you really want to be hyper picky at Joseph. And so he's an interesting character, and I think in a lot of things that we'll look at tonight, and there's more, but Joseph is indeed a good example. There are things that we can learn from Joseph. It's entirely possible. The first thing is, it's entirely possible for young people to lead godly lives. I grow weary of hearing people excuse things or use it as a complaint that this happens because people are young. You know, one of the things I guess is that, you know, a young person will make a bad choice. Oh, well, you know, they're just young and they don't know any better. Then how explain that to me, someone who's no longer young, fall into the category of being an older person, and they make a bad choice? Bad choices aren't just for the young. You make those at any ages. But now we see in Joseph's life early on that he led a godly life. And so he's a wonderful example of godliness. And when you read from Genesis chapter 37 through 50, you see that throughout his life. And the first thing now, as we get to noticing some things from the scriptures, the first thing is he's an obedient and respectful young person. In Genesis chapter 37, we look here at verse 13. Genesis chapter 37, verse 13. By the way, all the scriptures you'll see in the bar there are from Genesis. Israel, that would be Jacob, said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them." And he said to him, "I will go." Now, how about that? Now, back in verse 2, you find out, the same chapter, that Joseph was 17 years old when this took place. How about that? And his father's got work for him to do. We can probably imagine, you know, again, this goes along with that idea that all young people are this way. There'd be some kind of disagreement or balking or something along that line, but there wasn't with Joseph, and I'm sure there doesn't have to be just because a person is young. There's no argument from him. There's no excuses. It just says I think the New American, there's lots of different ways of putting this, but the New American Standard Bible has, "I will go." And he goes as a helper should. That's what he's trying to be. He's trying to be of help in this, and he just does what he's asked to do, and it's out of respect, obedience to his father. Now, the second thing is in chapter 39. Let's go over here. Chapter 39. Now, Joseph has some success in Egypt. And in verses 7 through 10, it came about after these events that his master's wife, that would be Potiphar's wife, looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. how then could I do this great evil and sin against God? As he spoke to Joseph, and she spoke to Joseph day after day, he did not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. Now, when you say that he understands sin from both sides, now this doesn't mean as saint and sinner. That's not what that means up there. It means, you know, that sin is against man and it's also against God. Obviously. Now, you know, it would be a sin against his master if he does this. But now, while that's in between in the writing, in between the lines, so to speak, it's also a sin against God to do something like this. So he understands this. He's looking at it from both sides. Sin against man, sin against God. All sin is against God. And a great number of times, it's also against our fellow man. But what else do we find here in this? Well, he refuses Potiphar's wife because he understands what sin is. It's not that hard to understand. But I think that there's also a great lesson to learn here. And apparently, there is something more important than sex. You think about our culture. In our culture, the worldly and everything that goes on, it's all about sex. You can't sell bulldozers without having some kind of sex appeal in the people that are trying to sell bulldozers. It never ends with this kind of thing. No matter what it is, it's all about that. We live in this kind of a culture where it's the most important thing. To refuse to participate while there must be something wrong with you. Well, there wasn't anything wrong with Joseph. And he understood that there was something more important than that. And I would think that it would be high time that more people understand that. You know, I think about, since I started preaching in 1981, wasn't very long after that I became acquainted one way or another, either through meeting different individuals or reading their writings and so on. And so, you know, my world grew larger, as it were, with preachers and other people and things like that. And I don't know how many it's been. I didn't have a score book that I wrote them all down in and things of that nature. But I know a number of men, good preachers. I know one that, boy, I would just go anywhere, if it was within reason, to listen to this man in a gospel meeting. And much to my surprise, I find out he's a serial fornicator. And finally, you know, you wonder, how was he exposed? I'm using this term as the world uses it. His wife ratted him out. She's the one that exposed him. And I thought rightly so. She just couldn't do it anymore. Take it anymore. And I just thought to myself, my goodness, how many has there been? And over the years, there's been a number of them. There's something more important than sex. There's such a thing. We talk about the whole subject of self-control. Sure. Self-control in a number of ways. But that's one, too, where there needs to be self-control. And since we live in a culture that's so overcome with this, self-control is something that's just paramount. And Joseph had that. You know, when she finally, you know, gets a hold of him by the robe, he leaves it in her hand and runs off. What's it say in the Bible? In 1 Corinthians, I think it's chapter 6. Flee fornication. Joseph really did it, didn't he? Yeah, ran away. Another thing about Joseph is he keeps his faith in times of trouble. Already mentioned that. But after this encounter, and Potiphar's wife did not give up. But then finally, she comes along here, chapter 39, verses 19 and 20, and she concocts a lie. an old saying about a woman scorned. My goodness. Now that's certainly one here. And he's going to pay for it. His master heard the words of his wife when she spoke to him saying, "This is what your slave did to me." Wasn't a bit of truth in it. But his anger burned. That would be, of course, Potiphar's anger. Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail. Now, he could very easily have just had him killed on the spot. "Joseph, come in here, I want to talk to you." And there he would be dead in a matter of seconds. But you know, you look over here and you see the first part of verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph. Always with Joseph. Even here on this occasion. And being cast in the prison, while that's not a very delightful thing, it's still better than the other alternative, isn't it? How about chapter 40, verse 14? With those individuals, the baker and the cupbearer, you find out here, or butler sometimes he's called. In verse 14, these two, Joseph says to them, "Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house." Well, that seemed like a reasonable request, even if you know all the story. But they didn't. They forgot him. The chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Of course, Baker didn't have much opportunity because he was brought out of prison so he could be killed. But you think about that. Despite all that, he kept his faith. Potiphar's wife's lie imprisons him. A fellow prisoner forgets him. And then in chapter 41 and verse 1, we find out here that it happened at the end of 2 full years. He was in there for 2 years. That two years would seem like a long time in one of our prisons. But back then, in one of these, oh my goodness, it would seem like 2 lifetimes. And as we said earlier, I got it here, so many let their problems rule their lives, but now Joseph didn't. And the Lord was with Joseph through all this. Another thing in chapter 41, when he's brought out to interpret dreams. In chapter 41, verses 15 and 16, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." Now, it's not me that's doing this, even though Pharaoh needed someone to interpret his dreams. It's God that does this. Now back in the chapter just a little bit, in 12 and 13, this is what's reported. There was a Hebrew youth among us, with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them, their dreams, to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And just as he interpreted for us, so it happened, he restored me in my office. But he hanged him, hanged the other one that was in there that he interpreted for. And what else do we find? Well, then if we go down just a little bit more, down to verse 46. What do we find down there? Verse 46. Joseph was what? 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. In our setting, he's still a young man. Joseph lived to the age of 110. So yeah, he was still a young man. How many today need to learn about the humility of Joseph? His high position does not inflate him in the least. In chapter 41, verses 39 and 40, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you." Now, I think you and I know that someone to be everything that happened, and then all of this power to be thrust out there at his disposal, a lot of people would just run amok. But here he is as governor, and you don't see power corrupting him. It doesn't inflate him. And what this former prisoner now gives is actually faithful service. And as I said earlier, he's only 30 years of age. It's remarkable to think that he could respond in this way. But that's Joseph for you. He's just different from so many others. And all this is related to his faith. Now, another thing is that finally we understand that later on, Joseph is reunited of sorts with his brothers, the very ones that sold him into the captivity. And at first they don't recognize him. Now, 23 years had passed. Of course they wouldn't recognize him. I'm sure his appearance had changed and so on. But Joseph recognizes them. I suppose the tip-off would be when he heard them perhaps speaking in Hebrew. And probably he might have been able to physically recognize one or two of them. But whenever this happens, how's he respond? Well, he shows no vengeance to those who had hated him. That's right, his brothers had hated him. Hated him because, well, he's this dreamer, they called him. And in all the things, how God was going to show deference to Joseph, and others would do this. Oh, they just couldn't stand it. They hated him. They hated him without cause. And that's what made them do that kind of thing. Of course, the world would say, oh, well, we'd understand now if he'd respond to them and in some harsh way and so on. But now, he really doesn't. Look how some of this ends up. There's several things to look at here. Chapter 42. In chapter 42, 21 through 24, then they said to one another, truly, we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us. Yet we would not listen, therefore this distress has come upon us. Reuben answered them, saying, Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood. They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. They needed the interpreter, he didn't. He turned away from them and wept. But when he returned to them and spoke to them, he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Do you notice what happened in there? Joseph wept when he heard his brothers confess. 23 years. And this was still weighing on their conscience. As it should. Sure. And now they think that this is the recompense for what they've done. But Joseph doesn't practice any vengeance. He's binding Simon to put a scare into him to get things done as Joseph has foreseen. In chapter 43, they finally bring Benjamin. They didn't originally bring Benjamin, but now that's what Joseph is demanding. And so they do this. And in Genesis chapter 43, verse 26, we'll start there. Joseph came home. They brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed to the ground before him. Like one of Joseph's dreams had been when he still lived with his brothers. Then he asked them about their welfare. Is your old father well, of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? They said, your servant, our father is well. He is still alive. And they bowed down to him in homage. As he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, Rachel had two sons, Joseph and Benjamin. He said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me?" And he said, "May God be gracious to you, my son." And Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred over his brother. And he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Do you get the picture there? Here's someone who's so overcome at the sight of his brother, his full brother, with whom they shared a mother. And he runs out of there. And the emotion of the moment has so got a hold of him that he's running about looking for a place to weep. After this, he washed his face and came out, controlled himself. He got a hold of himself. He said, "Now serve the meal." So Joseph weeps when he sees his brother. Then chapter 45. He finally reveals himself to those brothers. In chapter 45, verses 1 through 8, Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood before him, and he cried, "Have everyone go out from me." And there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it. You think about that. I wonder if the people outside the chamber were alarmed when they heard Joseph, their master, carrying on like this. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" And his brothers could not answer him. I'm sure they couldn't. For they were dismayed at his presence. They thought he was dead or someplace else. Not in their foggiest dreams would they have imagined that they'd run into him in these circumstances. Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come closer to me." And they came closer. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt." He reveals who he is. He weeps aloud over all of this. And things change. But still, again, right up there at the top, no vengeance to those who hated him. I wonder how many of those, when they heard, "That's Joseph," and they get close enough to realize it is, and he's got the information that only he would know to prove that. How many of those, 11 of them now, how many of those right there that moment thought to themselves, "He'll kill us for sure"? But he doesn't. In chapter 46, finally, all of them come to Egypt, all of his family, including his aged father. In chapter 46, verse 28, he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point the way before him to Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen. He's out ahead of the whole entourage to say, you know, "I'm here now, and the rest of everybody's, you know, right behind me." So Joseph then could prepare his chariot, went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and he wept on his neck a long time. Then Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I've seen your face, that you are still alive." Joseph's reaction when they came and told him, well, they didn't tell him. They really didn't. They took Joseph's coat, dipped it in some goat's blood, and came and asked the father, "Is this Joseph's coat?" Joseph had made the coat for him. "Oh, yeah." And he sees the blood on it, and he concludes, like they were hoping, that some animal has caught Joseph and torn him to pieces, and this is all that's left. But that's his blood on the coat. Now they told a lie, and Jacob believed the lie. And then there was Jacob's grief. That was as real as could be, even though everything that brought about that grief was just as false can be. And now, you think how much Jacob must have been relieved to see Joseph with his own eyes and to embrace him. And Joseph weeping on his neck. What a scene that would be. But once again, no callousness over this. No thinking about the great love that Joseph has for his father. And then look over there at those brothers. And the nerve of you making this man suffer all this time thinking I'm dead. He didn't do that. Although many might say that he had every right. So he weeps as a son at this time, not as a ruler of a nation. And then finally in chapter 50. We'll go over there. And verses 22 through 26. 50, chapter 50, verse 22 through 26. Now this is the, a lot of times it's called the death song of Jacob. But Joseph is a fruitful bough by a stream, a spring. Its branches run over a wall. The archers bitterly attacked him and shot at him and harassed him. But his bow remained firm and his arms were agile from the hand of the mighty one of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. I'm in chapter 49. What's your program, Terry? Chapter 50, sorry. Joseph stayed in Israel, and he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw the third generation of Ephraim's sons, also the sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knees. Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up out of this land to the land which he promised an oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here. And so Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. So Joseph made arrangements for his embalming and carrying him to back to the family burial place, if you will, in Shechem. He had faith that his bones would reach the promised land. And you think about it, you can trace through this. You see evidence of it that in Exodus where they took the bones of Joseph with them when they left Egypt. And then in Joshua when they got into the promised land and it conquered so much of it, there they buried the bones of Joseph finally. But all these travels, his remains would remind them of the goal. And the goal to make the promised land theirs. Now the lesson is yours, and turn to the song that's been selected. By way of conclusion, there are some instances, of course, in the life of Joseph that are good examples for us, and we've looked at a number of them tonight. But there's a couple more that we ought to consider. The overriding factor through all of this is that Joseph was obedient to God. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, Joseph was always obedient to God. And that makes him a good example for us. We should be obedient to God, and we should do that always. We could help you to become obedient with God, or help you along the pathway if you need help. Whatever the case might be, if there's something that we can do tonight, we'd be happy to assist you. Make your desire known while together we stand and sing.